I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is Tech Central. I'm joined now by Andrew Owens, who is Technical Lead for Interconnection and Peering at Data Center Operator Teraco. Now, Andrew is responsible, and I'm quoting here, for the design, commissioning, and management of the NAP Africa peering platform and the Africa Cloud Exchange. Andrew, I suspect we could get very technical very quickly in this discussion we're about to have, but we'll try our best not to do that. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Duncan. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. So I think many people in the telecommunications industry in South Africa at least are aware of NAP Africa and probably have a reasonable idea of what it is you guys do. But I think the average internet user out there, even if they have heard the name NAP Africa, probably don't know the significant role it plays in the internet plumbing in South Africa. So maybe for the benefit of people who want to know more about NAP Africa and what it is you guys do, maybe a quick overview would be good.
Okay, well, I'll try to get not too technical, but as a home user, people tend to look at the internet as the piece of fiber that comes into their home. You know, and beyond that, it's just sort of, no man's land.
Yeah.
The internet is a collection of autonomous systems. So an autonomous system is a network that is under one body of control. So, for example, if you looked at something like a Netflix or a Google or an Amazon, in internet terms, those are autonomous systems. The internet is the interconnection between all of those autonomous systems. Okay, so if your AS is not connected to anything else, then it is not on the internet. An internet exchange point like NAP Africa is literally just a place where all of those AS numbers can come together and interconnect with each other. That's not to say that if you didn't have an internet exchange point, you wouldn't be able to reach those networks. It would just be via a longer, costlier path.
Right.
So in this instance, my internet service provider at home or at my business peers at the internet exchange at NAP Africa, and they now have a direct interconnection to all of these other networks. Mm-hmm. So it reduces the number of intermediate networks that are in that path. So it means, so me as a home user, I have one hop onto the Google network. I have one hop onto the Microsoft network, Netflix, Amazon, Apple, etc.
So in effect, it makes everything faster and more efficient.
It brings everything on the internet closer to the users.
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest impact is that you're not traversing continents on undersea cables to a large extent, because a lot of the
that's the history that we got used to on the internet in South Africa. Everything went via London in the past. You know, the internet exchange didn't necessarily change that because the actual content still lived offshore.
Mm.
But the internet exchange, I think, changed the landscape in that it made the country more attractive.
Mm.
If you look at a lot of these content providers, they're not going to go and deploy infrastructure into a country or into a region where the interconnection landscape is poor.
Mm.
Okay, so they might look at it, and this happened with us as well. We started NAP Africa, I think probably in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning it was really difficult because not a lot of content was hosted locally. You know, so we had this internet exchange with very small amounts of traffic, because it was all what are referred to as eyeball networks or ISPs that don't necessarily serve content.
Yes.
But what happened after that is Google came to join the Internet Exchange, and I think they were the 24th member to connect to NAP Africa. And it was simply as a case of them looking at it and saying, here is an interconnection point where I can easily distribute my content to a lot of networks, so it makes sense not to put that down.
Yes.
You know, and then it's like a rolling stone. It just, it just gained momentum from there, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down.
Yeah. So how many people are in, how many companies are in NAP Africa now?
So NAP Africa, if you looked at unique Yes, numbers. We've got about 460, between 460 and 470.
Okay.
Numbers.
So those are telecommunications operators, internet service providers, and big content providers and others.
Content providers, yeah. Yeah. So it's a big mix. We're seeing a lot of enterprise networks starting to do this as well. A lot of organizations in the finance world, banks are now appearing as well.
Yeah.
So it's just, as I said, it's about bringing content closer to their eyeballs.
Yes. Now, NAP Africa wasn't the first internet exchange point in South Africa. There have been a few over the years. I think the Internet Service Providers Association was the first in the market, if I remember correctly, with Jinx and Sinx and Dinx exchange points. Is there interconnectivity between the IXPs as well? Is that a phenomenon?
No, it doesn't make sense for to interconnect IXPs. Because there are a number of technical reasons that it doesn't make sense to do that.
Okay.
I'll remind you that Jinx and Sinx and Dinx do still exist. Mm-hmm. They now operate under the body called Inx ZA.
That's right.
Which is still loosely related to ISPA. It's a slightly different model to what we have. It was, as you know, started by ISPA. They, I think in the beginning, only allowed ISPs to peer at the exchange, which didn't really make sense because, as I said, if you've got a bunch of eyeball networks, there's nothing for them to technically exchange across there. And it was difficult for content providers to come in because they had to then be registered with ISPA.
Yes.
And they weren't technically ISPs. It, just didn't make sense for them. So they got rid of that rule eventually. Things slowed down for a while, but they have come back. They are doing a lot of good things now. They recently started doing multi-site internet exchanges. So in other words, they put points of presence in many data centers to try and attract more connections. I think the biggest difference between NAP Africa and Inx is theirs is community run, but there's also a billing component to that. Our model is different in that we are completely sponsored by an organization.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have any fees to connect to the internet exchange. So you can come and connect to the exchange from anything from 1 to 100 to multiple 100 gigabit connections at no charge.
What's the business model then? Is Terrica fully sponsoring it, or do you charge your clients anything at all?
As NAP Africa, we don't charge a cent. Sorry, we don't have any of the mechanisms in place even to be able to charge for NAP Africa. So look, we when we started Terrica back in 2008, 2009, the difficulty that we had back then was obviously that data centers weren't popular then.
Yeah.
They weren't seen as one of the building blocks of the internet. So if you as a business went and bought an internet service from one of the providers, they would bundle in data center space for you. It was just part of the deal then, and people kind of got a couple of you within a data center. And we came along and said, well, we are only selling that data center portion. The market initially didn't react very well because the question was, everybody else is making money on the internet service and giving the data center away as a sweetener for the deal. But it was at no charge. And we were saying that we're not going to do any of those internet services. We're only going to focus on that building block at the bottom. It was difficult. We've told this story many times before. The market kind of suggested that our business wouldn't last 2 years. So it was tough in the beginning. We had, in the first year, I think we had three clients in Terrico facilities. We were selling this whole concept of easy interconnection. And it doesn't make sense when you've only got three people and they're already interconnected to each other. So we went to a couple of experts in the industry in other markets, And they said to us, you need an internet exchange in your facility. It's just, you know, it goes together. Data center, IXP, it makes sense. And so that's how NAPA Africa was born. You know, at the time we did engage with ISPA, mm-hmm. And offered them, you know, the opportunity to come and be the IXP partner.
Right.
But you know, it didn't work out at that stage. There was a lot of history. And I think they had just gone through a new contract, re-signing with their current host. Mm-hmm. And so we just decided that we were going to try and do it ourselves. And that's when NAPA Africa was born. And yeah, it's, I think, been one of the biggest drivers of business into Terrico. And just, you know, just to clarify, the internet exchange is free for anybody that can get to it.
Yeah.
So it's not restricted to Terrico clients. You know, we have people connecting remotely into the exchange from as far up as Nigeria, mm-hmm. DRC, Angola. We've got people coming in from Tanzania. You know, so there's a lot of African connectivity happening at NAPA Africa. None of those are direct clients of Terrico, but you need to remember that it still makes the facilities attractive.
Yes.
Because you have all of this content and you have all of these eyeballs connected in one location, you know, it becomes then a much easier sell. So, you know, Terrico will continue to sponsor that. It's there is a very high conversion ratio for the internet exchange.
How technically complex, Andrew, is it to build an internet exchange point?
Yeah, from a technical point of view, it's pretty straightforward. You know, we found out very quickly in the beginning that building an internet exchange does not work without building a community behind it.
Yeah.
You know, because the technical stuff, if you think about it, a lot of people have done it elsewhere in the world, you know, and there are a lot of places that you can gather information. There are a lot of friendly people in the industry and in other regions that are very keen to get internet exchanges going, especially in Africa. You know, so the technical side, I don't think is that difficult. It's about the community. It's about getting people together, you know, network operators, getting them together, socializing with them, sharing knowledge with them, getting to speak to each other, getting them to trust each other, and also building up trust amongst that community in the internet exchange.
Yeah.
So we spent I would say more effort on the community building aspect than we have on the actual technical bits. You know, it just makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So what does it actually look like physically?
It's a lot of switches and a hell of a lot of fiber. You know, at last count, I think, you know, we've got a couple of thousand fiber cross connects coming into the internet exchange. You know, you can actually look at the Johannesburg NAPA Africa Johannesburg. We've got on the NAPAfrica.net website. There is a map of exactly what the internet exchange looks like. Mm-hmm. So you know, it shows you every single switch that is on the network and also how much traffic each of those switches is busy doing.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, if you looked at, you can go and Google a picture of an internet exchange, you're going to see a traditional data center rack,
right,
with a lot of switches and a lot of fiber.
Okay, so switches and lots of cables coming out the back all over the place.
Basically. Yeah.
And what sort of size are we talking about here? Is the size of a fridge something bigger?
Well, I mean, it depends on the location. Obviously, Johannesburg is the bigger pop for us.
Yeah.
And I think the internet exchange there is spread out across probably four racks. So talking about data center racks, 49 new data center racks. You know, it's all because Terrico has got a number of different data centers within the facilities. You know, so we've got points in DC4 and DC6 and DC9, for example. It's spread out all over the place for resilience and also for being closer to to where specific customers are within the data centers.
Understood. So you've got these internet exchange points in different data centers. Is it also in Cape Town and Durban?
Yeah, so NAP Africa is in Cape Town and in Durban as well. We don't interconnect the NAP Africas. You know, we've always been very careful about competing with our clients. So we don't want to go and, you know, connect up all of these facilities and take away business from, you know, people that are selling cross-country capacity. Okay. So the internet exchanges in each region operate independently.
Okay. And I'm imagining, Andrew, that the primary IP traffic that flows through the internet exchange points is content, video, Netflix.
Well, yeah, absolutely content. I guess this is the oldest argument on the internet, which is more important, eyeballs or content. One can't exist without the other. So, yeah, look, I mean, definitely content. You can see, you know, if you had a look at the traffic graphs, you can actually see patterns emerge. You know, so pre-lockdown, you could see when everybody woke up and went onto their cell phones. You could see then when people were actually sitting in traffic, also using their cell phones, EDU. You can also then see when people get to work. You can see when they start, you know, opening up their laptops, downloading their email. And, you know, there's just these trends that you can follow. Interestingly, at lunchtime, you see a lot of business traffic increase, you know, people sitting, having their lunch and going on YouTube or streaming, you know, stuff. And then again, in the afternoon, it's the same thing. You can see when people start going home, when they sit in traffic, when they get home after they've done dinner. And, you know, there's always this spike at night that just seems to end at exactly about 9:30. Everybody just to go to bed. It's very interesting to see. And obviously that changed quite a bit during lockdown, once lockdown started.
So how much traffic flows across NAP Africa's internet exchange point daily on average?
Well, so pre-lockdown, we actually reached what is considered a milestone. I think this was about February 2020. So we hit a combined peak throughput of 1 terabit per second.
I remember that.
So that was quite a big deal for us. And I remember at that time, our CEO, Jan, came to me and he said, just watch it. It's going to explode from now. And it was difficult to buy into that because it took us 8 years to get to the point where we were moving a terabit per second of traffic. And after lockdown, it took us 5 months to increase by 50%. So it was within 5 months, we added half of the capacity that it took us 8 years to do.
Wow, so 1.5 terabits a second now.
Yeah, so it's 1.5 terabits. Joburg, independently on its own, is doing over 1 terabit of traffic, peaking at about 1.2, which is quite significant. It puts us in, you know, the top tier of internet exchanges across the world. You know, certainly we're nowhere near the amount of traffic that is being pushed in places like Amsterdam and London and Frankfurt. You know, those guys are in multi-terabits at the moment. But, you know, from an African perspective, I think it's quite an achievement. You know, and in terms of actual connected AS numbers, I think NAP Africa is in the top 10 in the world. I think probably at about number 6 or number 7, just by the number of people connecting to the internet exchange.
Fascinating. And Andrew, before I let you go, during the lockdown period, what are some of the interesting trends you noticed in terms of traffic flow across the network?
Yeah, it was, I mean, as I said, it's always interesting to watch internet traffic. I'll just remind, you know, we had this discussion yesterday with a number of technical people, and we keep having to remind ourselves that this has been a terrible time, but this is what we built the internet for. You know, it has performed its job. Initially, during when lockdown started, we saw a rapid increase in traffic in the first week, the first couple of days. Yeah. It was, you know, overnight we increased by about 30%. which was interesting to us. I think what we could figure out was that people were preparing their workforces to work from home. So in other words, it was, you know, preparing laptops, doing patch updates, you know, getting VPNs sorted out, people doing last minute emails, that sort of thing. After 1 week into lockdown, it sort of dipped a little bit. I think, you know, also in that first week, people were becoming accustomed to working from home. You know, there was a lot of rushing around and panic and that sort of thing. By week two, I think people were sort of getting used to it. Traffic slowed down slightly. And then people became accustomed to doing online meetings, virtual meetings. And after that happened, it just everything just exploded. One of the other interesting things that we saw was, you know, people were still accustomed to getting up at the same time in the morning. But now you didn't have to go and sit in traffic for 2 hours to get to the office. So people got up, went through their routine, and then went online. You know, so the peaks were starting earlier. And, you know, the peak was effectively not stopping.
Yes.
You know, because usually when you had that afternoon dip when people were going home, people were already on, you know, on their devices at home. And so you saw that peak in the morning. Kids were at home, you know, while the parents were working, there were kids were put in front of TVs and streaming Netflix and that sort of thing. So there was just this peak. There was just this flat peak during the day. And then again, that same peak at night, you know, that people consuming content just before they go to sleep. So that interestingly stayed the same. People still went to bed at the same time. But as I say, you know, there were more people online for longer times and there were more devices online, you know, and because people were working from home as opposed to being in a business environment. I think there was a bit more freedom as to what people could do on the internet. You know, there was no longer a restrictive firewall that was stopping you from going to certain places. I think in the beginning, people just were experimenting and just, you know, enjoying the fact that they, you know, that they could be online and the fact that they didn't have to, you know, drive to a meeting. And interestingly, so that's, you know, that's where we saw the peak was at 1.5. And we're still seeing it. We're still seeing a daily peak of 1.5 terabit. Even though people have started going back to the office, you know, I think that because people have become more comfortable with using the internet and, you know, having online meetings, I think that is a trend that's going to continue. I don't think that that's always the question we get is this the new norm? I don't necessarily think this is going to be the new norm because, you know, this was kind of forced on a lot of people and working from home doesn't necessarily work for everybody. It works well for some people. You know, other people and especially in the internet industry, as I said, you know, that community aspect is very important. And, you know, we found in all of the conversations and the meetings and the webinars that we've had with a lot of our colleagues and friends in the industry is that, you know, they're tired of being locked down. They want to get back to that social aspect of making the internet work.
Yes.
So I think, you know, certainly from a South African perspective, people are a lot more comfortable with working from home and using the internet for productivity. You know, especially in the enterprise market where, you know, lockdown saw a number of, I guess, cloud projects that were sort of tentatively being done or put on hold. And suddenly everybody's trying to get connected to the cloud, you know, because they've now seen the benefit of what the internet is all about. But I think there's going to be a mix in future of, you know, traditional, what it was versus what it could be or what it is now.
Yeah. I actually had the CIO of APSA Group on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he said that just before the lockdown, they had deployed Microsoft Teams across the organization. And the conversation that was happening in the IT department was, how on earth are we going to get all our employees to start using the software? There seems to be a great reluctance to use Microsoft Teams. We've deployed it at great expense. How are we going to get to use it? Then lockdown hit. And then everyone was using it overnight.
Job done. Yeah. And I mean, Teams was a massive portion of all of the video conferencing that was happening. I think something like 45% is Teams.
Teams and Zoom, so I guess, were the two big winners out of it. Anyway, very interesting conversation, Andrew, and I'm sure that traffic number when we next speak is probably going to have jumped over 2 terabits a second, if not higher.
Well, I hope not because of another pandemic.
Oh, yes, touch wood. Let's hope it's not because of that. Andrew Owens is a technical lead for interconnection and peering at data center operator Teraco. Thank you so much for talking to Tech Central.
Thanks very much, Duncan.